Hello listener, welcome to this half-term edition of Not Enough Champagne. This week we have a couple of B-sides, outtakes from episodes that we recorded over Christmas. First off, we've got a segment from the episodes we recorded over Christmas with my partner in propaganda Steve Haynes, with Councillor John Cotton, Chair of Birmingham Fabians Luke Don Davis, and Deputy Leader of Birmingham City Council, Councillor Bridget Jones, also makes a cameo appearance. This starts off with us talking about the loosening social fabric of British society and goes from there.
Which is around.
It's like we can leave the room now.
Yeah, I'll be here for an hour and a half. Which is around professionalisation and gentrification of politics. And there has been a professionalisation of politics. It does require different skill sets now, more education driven skill sets in terms of presentation and communication skills. That has created a political class. Now, that political class tends to suffer from groupthink simply because of across the parties. I mean, this is a huge. This, to me, was the biggest failing of Blair and that the third way in Labour. And actually, I see the same faults in the current iteration of Labour under Corbyn, which there's been no friends on either side of the party. People have to come from a certain background. That means they all have very similar experiences. And you saw this, you also saw this in the Brexit referendum. And you still see it now, which is this assumption of people will all have exactly the same interpretation of facts. So it's a case of, here is a fact about Brexit, for example, and here is my interpretation of it. And if you don't agree with my interpretation of it, I'm going to repeat the fact. And then if you still don't agree with my interpretation of the fact, I'm going to assume you're too stupid to understand the fact. Rather than actually people understand that fact, they just don't perceive it or interpret it in the same way that you do. And the reason that you have that groupthink is because everyone around them has had that group, has got that same thought process. It's the kind of the arrogant lie of the Enlightenment, that everyone will reason the same way, and they don't necessarily. And that has led to the situation with Brexit, it's led to the situation with the rise of nationalist populism across Europe and across the world, and it's because of the absolute fraying of the fabric of our society.
Hey LJ, we're back from the pub. You still going on about your PhD?
More or less.
It's fine, I've edited about 4 hours out of that.
You see what I put up with, people?
Yeah. But
hear what I put up with.
I think it's a point about empathy, isn't it? And I think it's one of those things about the fact that a lot of our political discourse is conducted online now rather than face-to-face and across different groups that leads to this kind of lack of empathy. So
yeah.
I've been organising a Labour People's Vote event. And as part of that, we advertised it on Facebook and sponsored it on Facebook. So a lot of people who probably don't necessarily usually see People's Vote stuff saw it in their news feeds. And we had about 80 comments on this event, which were almost exclusively hostile to the idea of People's Vote. You know, not just the, oh, well, we've had the People's Vote already, but almost, who's behind Labour People's Vote? And people saying, oh, it's probably George Soros funding it. But and then one of the things that was in my mind, in the back of my mind about that is, oh, well, I wonder how many of these people are actually real people, how many of them are Russian bots? And I feel like it's a problem with our politics. It's almost choose your own conspiracy, isn't it? I think you either have, on the one side, you've got people thinking, oh, well, it's just George Soros and the Jews and big bankers funding one side. And the other side thinks, well, actually, these people are stupid, or these people are racist, or these people don't exist anyway and are just creations of Vladimir Putin's secret service.
The social media in particular, I think, already has and will continue to be one of the most interesting things when it comes to political discourse and debate, not just in the UK, but around the world. But especially when you boil it down to that issue of empathy. Because fundamentally, you take any two people who have a massive argument online and are throwing insults at each other, you put them in the same room together, and you know what? They'll disagree, and they'll have a conversation and a debate. It may get slightly heated, but it won't reach the same kind of levels that will occur online, because you know no one's going to make a death threat over something face to face, because there are actual repercussions for that.
Anyone want to? No.
I think that's right. I also think, you know, having spent the best part of 30 years now knocking on doors and doing having conversations with the public. Shut up. Actually, there have always been people out there who think weird and malicious and unpleasant things. But back in the day, it was a bit more difficult to... You had to make an effort to really express that. You know, you had to bother to write a letter and stick a stamp on it and send it through the post to an MP or a councillor. Now you can just pop up online and have a pop that way. So there's something about this... But these platforms, great and empowering and very democratising though they can be, it's also a platform on which people can just say the really unpleasant stuff that otherwise they had to make a real effort to articulate.
Yeah, and I think on that, what's the kind of the interesting thing there is you talk about the contrast between sending that letter versus sending the tweet or posting something on Facebook, is that the letter is private. You write it, you may tell somebody you've written it, but it doesn't have the same performative context as the public-facing post on something like Twitter and Facebook, where there is quite literally gamification built into the system of how many people have liked this, how many people have retweeted this, how many people have shared this. And as a result of that, you end up with this kind of self-reinforcing situation where people kind of... Basically, it has been shown that when you get retweeted, when you get likes on Twitter, it gives you an endorphin hit in the same way as like when you're gambling or whatever, and it becomes addictive. So that what you then do is move on and continue to the things that get you the likes. And because we are pushing ourselves into these narrower and narrower tribes online, all you see is a constant stream of self-reinforcement of your views, which means when you do come across somebody else online or in reality, you just completely dismiss them.
And it also leads to a sort of a spiral or a race to extremism, right? Because no one wants to put out something that's already being put out, because you don't get the likes, you don't get the retweets and what have you. You have to go one step further than anyone else has gone so far. So you then get this competitive move towards being ever more extreme in your viewpoints, because that's what gets the likes, that's what gets the retweets, is these very stark issues. So that's definitely one of the things. And I think the other thing, and it's my main big hobby horse, so you may want to all go down the pub again. But is the...
Your Ranstone,
yeah.
Is the atomisation of society that came in the late 70s, 80s, and is still there, and which the left has stopped challenging. This notion that we are all individuals, that there is no such thing as society, that the community doesn't matter, or the community is an active threat to various small groupings or what have you, and that the balkanisation of the electorate that comes from both left and right these days, and which essentially feeds into the narrative of the right, which is that society is a zero-sum game and that these groups are in competition for scarce or finite resources rather than cooperating to enlarge the cake, if you like, and taking the same percentage of the cake, but enlarging it, that you know, used to be the groundings of a politics for the common good, and you know, all the stuff around citizenship and patriotism that Attlee and Bevan and Bevin and, you know, that generation of Labour politicians had the absolute core of their politics.
Something that we were talking about before we started recording are the paucity of decent political communication and the art of communicating a message. And I mean, Theresa May is a notoriously bad communicator in terms of communicating what she wants to achieve. And I feel like if we are going to bring the country together in 2019, whether we have May's deal goes through, we have another referendum, it needs to be someone articulating a kind of common message for everyone, I think, and especially appealing to those people in towns who voted Leave out of economic insecurity and bringing them into a kind of a shared communal outlook and identity. I think that's probably necessary. It's just trying to see who does that and how, because throughout her prime ministership, she's tried to do that and tried to talk about the just about managing, but it's never really happened. Partly, as we've said in the podcast, Brexit's got in the way. But I think there's also something more fundamental about her vision as well, which is just missing at the moment.
Part of the reason why it's impossible for the Conservative Party under what any leadership to do that is because of the fact that One Nation Conservatism is now dead. It's been strangled to death or smothered to death over the space of about 40 years, starting with the height of Thatcherism. You know, you sort of you think about the kind of social policy issues you've just been talking about. You know, the issues around homelessness, the very brutalisation of the welfare system, and it'd be very hard to imagine a sort of Harold Macmillan or even a Ted Heath type Tory. Acting in that way. Now, you know, I've got lots of issues with One Nation conservatism, that kind of paternalistic approach to working class people. But there was a sense of obligation to a wider nation and society that doesn't factor in when you are essentially pursuing an entirely market-based approach. And of course, what's really interesting about, or really damning, more to the point, about what's happened since 2010 is you've kind of had... Bluntly, you know, two very rich boys in the shape of Cameron and Osborne pursuing this kind of Thatcherite tribute act, which was just essentially we will slash and burn and go for the free market approach on everything, which has then created a social crisis that, you know, actually put some of the stuff that Thatcherism did at its height to shame. I just don't see how any Conservative leader is in any position to reanimate that kind of approach, because I just think the Conservative Party is now in a very different and much more right-wing space.
It's a long way from Anthony Eden talking about the property-owning democracy in the 1920s and 30s. Next up is a segment that we recorded for our New Year's resolutions episode, but once again ended up on the metaphorical cutting room floor. It's all about the Lib Dems. Hello, Mark, by the way. Although, I'm not sure you're going to like this bit, as we are a little bit mean. We had the resolution for the Lib Dems, which was to find a way to be relevant.
Yeah, that didn't really happen, did it? The Lib Dems are still nowhere. Vince Cable's still underwhelming as leader, and there seems to be no real obvious way out of their rut at the moment. They are just stuck in a position where too many people remember what they did in government and are holding that against them to potentially make the gains that could have been made from stealing off the more ardent Remainers from Labour. They are picking up some Remainers from the Tories, but then they're not picking up anywhere near as many as you know, that they had the potential to do.
I think it is difficult for the Lib Dems at the moment. I think partly because just the dichotomy of Brexit and our rubbish electoral system means that the two-party system has snapped back into play for now. How long that it happens for, it's hard to say, but certainly judging by the polls, it's been that way since the election. So, well, actually, if you look at in terms of the polls, it's been that way for about 6 or 7 years and doesn't show much sign of abating. Like we've said on previous podcasts, the fact that they are not the third biggest party means they get less broadcasting time, which means it's really hard for their message to cut through. I think on your point about being in government, though, I think there's a wider thing for the Lib Dems, which is I don't feel that they've done well enough at distancing themselves from the coalition. And I mean, this is something that Labour under Ed Miliband, and to a lesser extent even like Labour under Corbyn, now has a problem of trying to take the bits that you're proud of in government while also saying, yeah, we really mucked up that bit.
Yeah,
it's hard to move on when the guy in charge of the party is the person who is in charge of the biggest muck up in the coalition from that particular party. Yeah. So Vince Cable is the guy who introduced tuition fees.
Absolutely, and in many ways I think this is kind of speaks to the tragedy that was Tim Farron's leadership at the Liberal Democrats. Tim Farron, you know, wasn't a member of the coalition government. Tim Farron had managed to keep himself separated to some degree from the coalition government decisions. He was able to, you know, not necessarily be associated with those decisions in the same way as Cable has been, which in turn means that in theory, if he hadn't blown his opportunity as leader by banging on about whether or not gay sex was a sin, he'd have been in an ideal position to maybe be able to take on Labour from a kind of a pro-Remain viewpoint. Cable, because of his position, can't do that. Cable, because of his position, just has no credibility, and it's not Cable's credibility has been damaged not just due to that, but for a myriad of other reasons as well in terms of how he's handled himself in terms of the leadership, such as not bothering to turn up to vote for certain things, just not even turning up to PMQs and things like that because he knows he's not going to get a question, which just creates a bad image. Like, even if you're not guaranteed to get a question, you still stand up because you're going to be seen every week. And I can guarantee you that the cameras will fall on you because you're Vince Cable and a former government minister. Basically, they're just kind of screwed at the moment until they can get rid of Vince. But the problem is, the only possible replacement they've got at the moment is Joe Swinson. Joe Swinson's a very effective politician, but still was a government minister in the coalition.
Well, I don't think, though, that she's associated in the public at any rate with the coalition in the way that Vince Cable was. She wasn't really the public face of the Dems and the coalition in the way that Vince Cable was. I think you're right that, Tim Farron's leadership was, a tragedy of biblical proportions, one might say. Again, one of the few maybe Lib Dem stories that kind of cut through last year, at least it did on left-wing Twitter. Polly McKenzie, who was, I think, was a special advisor for Nick Clegg, who was writing about...
Yes, I'd forgotten this.
The plastic. But so she was talking about, I think, benefit cuts. The Lib Dems allowed there to be extra benefit cuts in return for the plastic bag tax. Having read David Law's book on the coalition, which is a really interesting read, but one of the ways, the problem it feels like the Lib Dems had, and it's a problem maybe you can only really see in hindsight, is there wasn't necessarily much of a shared agenda for government between the Lib Dems and the Tories. It wasn't so much a synthesis of Tory Lib Dem policies. It became instead very much a kind of siloing off. And the Lib Dems...
It was horse trading. It was tit for tat.
Indeed. So the Lib Dems made sure that they had areas... And like education, say, which would go for their manifesto, in energy and climate change, say, so they could implement their manifesto, but then didn't really then get many ministers in the kind of economic levers or in the Home Office, say. And they didn't give Nick Clegg that big Department of State. They gave him instead Deputy Prime Minister, in many ways a constitutionally meaningless title. And it did lead to horse trading. You have the Quad, which mostly was Cameron, Clegg, Alexander, Osborne, who traded different policies. The problem with that is you do end up with trading like this, which just looks terrible.
Yeah, and especially when your trade is for a plastic bag tax versus, you know, cuts to benefits. Like I remember being at the Lib Dem conference in the audience when Nick Clegg announced this was the policy, and I turned to the people that I was sat with. They were like Liberal Youth members, I think, at the time, and we just looked at each other perplexed as to why this was being hailed as some kind of massive breakthrough. Don't get me wrong, it's not a bad policy. You know, it has done its job in terms of reducing the number of plastic bags that are being utilised. Cool, that's a good thing. But trading it for cuts to benefits, it seems to me to suggest that at that point in time, the Lib Dems were just desperate for wins of some kind, something to trumpet, something to show, look, we've done this, we've done this, we've done this, here's our record of government and why we're not as bad as you think we are. We're not enablers, we're doers. And I just think they lost sight of the big picture.
And I think the problem now is, as you said already, they can't get converts from, not many converts, I mean, from Labour over Brexit. They've got a few from the Tories, but there's not many on the left, essentially, I think, because it's really hard for them to make the case against austerity. Because as soon as they do, people will say, well, you started this in government. And it is a very difficult line for them to take. I feel until you have a new leader, it's going to be hard for the Lib Dems to make much of a cut through. Or maybe what you need something, and this could easily happen, if you do end up with a situation where Jeremy Corbyn gets Labour to abstain on Theresa May's Brexit deal, say, or somehow inexplicably end up working with the Tories to put something through, then you could see lots of people join the Lib Dems. But even then, that's very likely.
Even then, the left would more likely break towards the Greens. Just because they've been more solid, they're more solidly left wing in a number of ways, and they've been as stridently, if not more pro-EU than the Lib Dems have been.
So I think for the Lib Dems, it's find a way to be relevant, but also almost trying to come to terms with that time in government, I think is kind of important as well. And we can keep tabs on whether they do that throughout the year.
Fundamentally, though, what they need to do is just ditch Vince Cable,
fire him out of a cannon.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And then hope to God that Joe Swinson or somebody else is able to fix the mess they're in. Because if they can't, the party's dead.
On that happy note, sorry, Mark. Incidentally, Mark Pack, who is our favourite and possibly only celebrity listener, he has a new podcast out, as yet untitled, which he does with Stephen Tull, which is well worth checking out on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully we can hook up and do some sort of LibLab pact on our podcasts. That would be quite a fun thing to do. We'll be back with a normal episode next week, probably involving a lot of crying over Brexit. In the meantime, our website is notenoughchampagne.com. Our theme tune was produced by Dave Depper. James Cramp produced our logo. Our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod, and my name's Corey Hazelhurst, and you can find me on Twitter @paperbackrioter. Happy plotting.